Well, we spent a little bit of time this morning talking about what it's like to understand Jesus' mission as far as the workplace is concerned. I think we're all pretty familiar with the fact that Jesus was a carpenter. And he wasn't the carpenter who built grand edifices. He wasn't the carpenter. Oh, thank you. Wasn't the carpenter who built beautiful furniture. Jesus was a carpenter. He had a pretty ordinary job. He just worked in Nazareth, and he probably made ox yokes. But nevertheless, Jesus didn't demean the idea of work, but rather gave us a practical way of understanding our relationship with God. We're not trying to rise above work. We're not trying to look forward to the time when we don't have to go to work anymore. We're Christians, and we live and we work among men. So when we think about what Jesus did, we have to think about it in terms of some really practical advice. Now, we talked this morning about how the Apostle Paul was a tent maker. I've never made a tent in my life. I've never had that kind of a job. But I have had jobs. I worked in a factory for a while, and I made furniture that they put into hotels. Today, they don't make furniture the way I did. I stood in front of a drill press, and every time a piece of wood came along, I went like that and drilled a hole in it. Now they use CNC machines. You have to know all kinds of computer programming just to work in a furniture factory. So the work that we do as laborers corresponds in some ways to the work that Jesus did. He was working in a carpenter shop. And the first thing that we could say in a real practical sense when we talk about what it's like to be a laborer in the workplace is work as if you were working for God. You know, that makes a lot of sense. We're not really working for the guy that pays us a check. We're really working for God when we're in the workplace. In Ephesians, the 6th chapter, the passage that Richard read, slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in the sincerity of your heart, as to Christ. So the way that we feel about God is the way that we ought to feel about the labor that we do that is pleasing to God. He goes on and he says, don't do it by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will render service as to the Lord. Notice the number of times that he references God, he references Christ, he references the Lord. We are God's representatives in the workplace. With goodwill doing service as to the Lord, not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, he will receive back from the Lord, whether he be slave or free. Now, along the same vein, in Colossians, the 3rd chapter, and beginning there in Colossians 3, what did I do? I made something go away.
I'll get it back. Give me just a minute to make sure that I get to the right place. Let's see. So we're talking about our practical work for God. Oh, I went the wrong way. Isn't technology fantastic? There it is,
Colossians, the third chapter, beginning at verse 22. He says, slaves, in all things, obey those who are your masters on the earth, not with external service, as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, do your work heartily for the Lord rather than for men. knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve. He who does wrong will receive the consequences of the wrong which he has done, and that without partiality. Finally, Titus, the second chapter, and beginning at verse 9, the Apostle Paul is writing to Titus, telling him how to be a good minister of the gospel. He says, urge bond slaves to be subject to their own masters in everything, to be well-pleasing, not argumentative, not pilfering, but showing all good faith, so that they will adorn the doctrine of God our Savior in every respect. So he adds something here. We do it as to the Lord, and we do it without pilfering. That's an old term. We're not used to using the term pilfering. Today, we probably would refer to it as without stealing the software that's on your company computer. Without taking those things that are made available to you to use in the furtherance of your work. Johnny Cash sang a song about a 1949, 50, 51, 52, 53 Cadillac that he snuck out of the factory one little piece at a time in his lunchbox or in his good friend's RV. That's not us. We're not going to be built. We're not going to build a 49, 50, 51 Cadillac, but we're also not going to be stealing paper. We're also not going to be pilfering software. That's the way that we generally get in trouble. The next thing that he says is, have a lot of gratitude for a believing boss. Not many of us are privileged to work for someone who's a Christian. For the most part, we work for people that don't know God. But when we do have that wonderful opportunity to work for somebody that is a Christian, the apostle gives us some instruction. He says, all who are under the yoke as slaves are to regard their own masters as worthy of all honor, so that the name of God and our doctrine will not be spoken against. Those who have believers as their master, but must not be disrespectful to them because they're brethren, but must serve them all the more because those who partake of the benefit are believers and beloved. Teach and preach these principles. Isn't it a wonderful thing to work for somebody that's a Christian? Wouldn't it be great if we could all do that? But we can't all go to work for Dean. As much as I'd like to say that we could do that, we can't. We can be thankful for those people that do have the opportunity to work for believing masters or believing bosses, and we can be grateful for the benefit that that gives to us. I wish that we could all do that. The next thing that he says is that even when they aren't Christians and they don't act like Christians and they're not good bosses, what he says is, be obedient anyway. That's when it's hard, frankly, to serve someone who is mean and disrespectful, to serve someone who may disrespect God. But he says, obey. 1 Peter, the second chapter, beginning at verse 18, the Apostle Peter says, servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect. And you'll notice that many times he uses the word slaves and masters, or sometimes he uses them servants and masters. We're not living in that kind of society today. Most people that are here are neither slaves nor slave owners. But we are masters and workers. And so he by the same token, he's talking to those people that are employees. He says, Be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. For this finds favor, if for the sake of conscience toward God a person bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. What credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience, but if you do what is right and suffer for it, if you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. It's hard to work for a boss who is not a good person. And you've probably been in those situations, and I hope that's not my fault. I used to tell people when I was teaching in college, turn off your phones, and invariably I was the one that would forget. And we all have iPhones, so they all sound the same. Everybody has to reach for their phone. The next thing he says is he gives some basic advice. Now, this is not related to the mission specifically of Jesus. This advice has to do with the overall relationship between God and man and the fact that God has created us and knows about us. So he gives us some practical advice for when we're employees. And in this particular passage in Proverbs, the 22nd chapter, he words it in terms not of employees, but in terms of lazy people. And he says, don't be lazy. Be an employee. He says, Proverbs, the 22nd chapter, verse 29, do you see a man who is skilled in his work? He will stand, Proverbs, the 12th chapter, at verse 24. To the hand of the diligent will rule, but the slack hand will be put to forced labor. So don't be lazy. Be industrious. Then he says to those who are employees, excel at your craft. Whatever you do, do it well. It might be that your job is maintaining a database. It might be that your job is building furniture. It might be that your job is running a mill. But whatever you do, do it well. In Proverbs, the 22nd chapter, and in verse 29, he asks the question, do you see a man who is skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. He'll not stand before obscure men. So when you excel in your work, when you excel in your labor, when you're not lazy, when you obey, even when people are mean and oppressive, when you are grateful for a believing boss, and when you work as if you were working for God, you can act like a Christian and you can impact the world in which you work. That's what Jesus did. I have a feeling that when Jesus was a carpenter, he was a good one. He worked hard at his craft. He obeyed his father and might have even been thankful that his father was a Jew. Well, we can say these things about those who are employees. What about when we're not the employee, but when we're the manager? When we're the one who's in charge? When we're the boss, how should we act? The first thing that I can say is that we should be like God and show God's view of impartiality when it comes to our employees. Look at Ephesians, the 6th chapter, at verse 9. He says, you masters, remember, Ephesians 6, verses 5 through 8, he's been talking to those who are employees. He gets to verse 9 and he says, you masters, do the same things to them. give up the threatening, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. So treat everyone that works for you in the same way that God treats people, without any kind of partiality. Have you ever been an employee and had a boss who was partial to certain people and you knew it? That's a really difficult situation to put people in. And God does not smile upon us when we do that kind of thing as the master. And sometimes we have the notion that we're the person that owns the business, we're the person that has the gold, and so we get to make the rules. And that's not the case. We understand that we all answer to the same God. The next thing that he says is, if you're the boss, give your employees what's fair and just. Colossians, the 4th chapter, verse 1. Masters, grant to your slaves justice and fairness, knowing that you too have a master who is in heaven. Very closely related to what we've already read, isn't it? We understand that not only do our employees have a master who is in heaven, we have a master who is in heaven, and we must give to our employees that which is fair and just. Don't withhold the wage of the ox that treads out the corn. We must give them what they deserve. We cannot be, as masters, oppressive. We'll look at the Old Testament because the wording that we find in the Old Testament is so clear. Deuteronomy, the 24th chapter, beginning at verse 14. Again, this is not specifically related to Jesus' mission. It's related to God and the way that God treats the world in general. So he says, do not be oppressive. You shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy. Neither he is one of your, whether he is one of your countrymen or one of your aliens who is in your land and in your town. You will give him his wages on his day before the sun sets, for he is poor and sets his heart on it. So the Lord will not cry against you, so that he will not cry against you to the Lord, and it becomes sin in you. Do not withhold from your employee that which is due to them. When I was much younger, I said that I worked in a furniture factory. I built furniture. I didn't make very much money. It was a summer job, and I was in high school. But there were guys who worked in that furniture factory who were illegal immigrants. And they weren't paid nearly as much as I was paid because the boss knew he could get away with it. They couldn't go to the authorities and say, I'm not being paid the wage that was promised to me. It was taking advantage of those that worked for him because they were poor and needy. And we can't do that. Not as Christians. God will not allow us to be oppressive. Jeremiah, the 22nd chapter, and beginning in Jeremiah 22 at verse 13, Jeremiah says, woe to him who builds his house without righteousness, his upper rooms without justice, who uses his neighbor's services without pay and does not give him his wages, who says, I will build myself a roomy house with spacious upper rooms and cut out its windows, paneling it with cedar and painting it bright red. Do you become a king because you are competing in silk and cedar? Did not your father eat and drink and do justice and righteousness? Then it was well with him. He pled the cause of the afflicted and the needy. Then it was well. Is not that what it means to know me, declares the Lord? Sometimes we mistakenly conclude that we can make more money. We can keep more money for ourselves if we withhold the wages of those who work for us. And that's just not the case. It doesn't work. Finally, Malachi, the third chapter, at verse 5. God says, I will draw near to you for judgment. I will be swift witness against the sorcerers and against the adulterers and against those who swear falsely. All people that we would of course avoid, he says, and also against those who oppress the wage earner in his wages. The widow and the orphan and those who turn aside the alien and do not fear me, says the Lord of hosts. Now we know all of that's true, and I think intuitively we understand that this is the way that we ought to behave. But more important than the intuitive understanding is the notion that God expects this of us. This is the way that we ought to be employees. It's the way that we ought to be employers. So now let's think just for a little bit about some practical advice for sharing our faith when we're in the workplace. It's a touchy subject, I know. Difficult for many of us to do what we would like to do in the workplace as far as sharing our faith. But I know that probably the most powerful tool that we have in terms of sharing our faith is the way that we live. So in the first place, we can talk about sharing our faith through the way that we live, or sharing God through our lived faith. 1 Peter 2nd chapter, verse 12. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, because of your good deeds as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. This idea of example, the idea that the way that we live is observed by the people that are around us, is as true in the workplace as it is anywhere else. Now, we may not be able to pull out our Bibles and sit down and talk with our neighbors in the workplace because that's not appropriate, but we can always live like Christians. We can always, by virtue of the things that we do, impact the people that are around us. I know that I could ask anyone in here who's been in the workplace, if the way that they have lived before God has caused other people to ask them questions. And I know that everyone, with a little reflection, would be able to say, you know, that's true. That's true. The second thing that we can think about is that we always have to watch what we say. It's really easy to destroy a reputation just because of the things that we say. In Ephesians, the fourth chapter, at verse 29, the apostle says, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who will hear. Watch your words. It's easy to let our tongue run away with us. James says the tongue is an unruly evil. Who can tame it? It's so easy to destroy our influence by virtue of the things that we say. Then we can also point out, and I think we all understand this, There are some people that just don't want to hear about God. They don't want to know God. You remember when Jesus sent out the 12 on the limited commission? He said, go into a city and ask about people that want to hear about God. If you enter into a house and they don't want to know God, leave. Respect the decision of those people that don't want to hear about God. You can't force them to hear about God. If they don't want to hear, respect their decision. But it occurs to me that we need to be careful to let them make a decision about whether they want to hear or not. You know, sometimes I have a tendency to make a judgment about the people that I'm around. And that judgment is that they don't want to know about God, and so I don't say anything. I don't make myself available because I've just made a decision that they don't want to know about God. When I was preaching at Norwalk, we had baptized a fellow who had been worshiping with us for some time. And a guy who had worshiped there many years before came back, moved back to the area when he retired. Walked in the back of the church building, looked down the aisle, and saw this fellow that we had baptized and was amazed that this fellow had become a Christian. He said, of all the people that I ever worked with, I would never have thought that Red would want to know anything about God. Red was frankly a drunkard. I used to get tired of covering for him in the workplace. But he had become a Christian. I wonder how often I've been guilty of prejudging other folks, deciding that they didn't want to know about God. Really, making the decision for them. Not respecting the decision that they made, but making a decision for them. But we have to be very, very careful. Yes, we have to respect the fact that some people don't want to hear about God. And yes, in the workplace there may be rules that say that we can't pull out our Bibles and have a Bible discussion. But no one can ever take away from us the tremendous power of our example. When that power starts affecting people, it's amazing what happens. Steve Terry worshiped with us when we were at Norwalk. Steve was a mechanic, worked for a Ford dealer. And in short order, Steve managed to discuss God with the parts manager, with two other people that worked at the Ford dealer with him. It seemed like every time it turned around, Steve was bringing somebody to God, introducing somebody to the tremendous blessing that Steve had. And I used to ask him, I said, Steve, how do you get these people to be excited about God? What is it that you say? Because I wanted to do what Steve was doing. He said, I've never asked anybody. I just act like a Christian. And they ask me. Nobody can ever take that away from us. And when they ask, yes, we can share. Maybe not at work. Maybe we'll go out after work. We can have a cup of coffee together, but we can still share the gospel. Nobody can take that away. Oh, the workplace is a difficult place to be sometimes. I know how difficult it is to be surrounded by people that really don't want to have anything to do with God. I was on faculty at Eastern Washington University. You can't find a more opposed group than faculty members. But I still had conversations about God. I found out that one of the fellows that I taught with had trained to be a preacher. decided that he didn't want to be, but we have marvelous discussions about God. I was a student, found out that one of my professors was trained to be a preacher, but decided that he wasn't going to do it anymore because he'd been so shamefully treated in the church where he was worshiping. We have wonderful discussions about God. It's a terrible place sometimes, but we can make it better. If you're here and you're thinking about the way that you've behaved in the workplace, whether an employee or an employer, and on reflection you think, you know, there's some things that I need to change. We want to help you. We want to support you. We can't do that for you. We can't make that change. But we can certainly support you as you try to make the change in your life that will make your workplace a better place. You can become a Christian. Whether you're an employer or an employee, doesn't matter. You can act like a Christian. Whatever your need is, we want to help you. Raise your hand or say something to someone when you're dismissed. You can come down to the front while we sing the song. It doesn't matter. You can meet somebody this evening after we're dismissed. Let us know that we can help. That's what we want you to think about while we stand and we sing this song.